You're about to listen to a talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown at the beautiful Academy of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information on our center, please see our Facebook page or our website. Thanks for listening. I hope these words of wisdom make a positive difference in your life.
Thank you, Peter. I heard a little bit of Elton John in there. That was great. And I say the same thing about my tie. I can only wear this tie about 1 week of the year. Easter week is the only time. Today I had a whole nother shirt on, a blue shirt, red tie to go with it. I was like, no, there's only a tie that I can wear one Sunday a year. Let me pull that one out and look at that. So I'm glad you're really here. Between Friday and Saturday, I almost switched my whole talk, and I was going to do a Noah talk and about the great flood. We had 2 days of pouring down rain, and it just seemed like we only need 38 more to before we had this major flooding going on. But I wanted to go ahead and stay with my talk today for Easter, mainly because for 1,984 years have we been telling this story over and over and over, 1,984 years. And so we've told the rabbit story about the Easter rabbit, believe it or not, for only about 332 years. The rabbit story and the Easter hare didn't come up in Germany until about 332 years ago. We brought it to America in the 1800s. So that's when we started having the Easter hare story and things like that. But this tomb story goes even deeper, 1,984 years. And that's what I want to talk about. But before we talk of where that story came from, I want to tell you a brief history of the good book. Now I'm going to pull out the good book, and I don't want you running for the exits when I pull out the good book. But this is the good book. This is the Better Homes and Gardens new cookbook, and for those of you listening online, it's that red plaid cookbook that your grandmother had. So this is the good book, and I want to let you know I love this good book. I'm going to set it up here because I want to talk about it a little bit and everything. But mainly for this book, I take this book literally. Now, when I go ahead and I open up, let's just say, a cookie recipe or something like that, I follow the recipe to a T. I mean, when they ask for a cup of sugar, I get it up and I hold it. I take out a teaspoon. I look again. I put the teaspoon back in, and then I have my cup of sugar. I turn on the oven to 350 degrees, but I don't just turn on the oven to 350 degrees. I've got that little thermometer inside the oven, and I'm down. Oh, no, it's not 350 yet. I need to turn it up. I'm getting it down to a science because I am taking this literally because I don't want to go outside the box for what's happening with this. So when I take that recipe to a T with my cookies, what happens? It comes out hard as a rock, chips your tooth, you get indigestion. But your grandmother had this book. Your grandmother had this book. Did she follow that recipe to a T? Not one bit. Why? Because she's got wisdom. She's got knowledge. She's got love. And when you add all of that to the recipe, which I was just omitting 100%, do you get the most delicious cookies that you've never had since your grandmother made those? Because she added those things. So you have to understand, if you take this book literally, you're going to get a chipped tooth and indigestion. But if you take this book in a much bigger way and add wisdom and love and knowledge and courage and everything, you get something much spectacular. So now I've got this other good book. Please don't go running for the exit. Your grandmother had this book too. It's the Holy Bible. She had this book too. Or your mother might have had a Torah. Torah is the same thing. Doesn't matter. She might have had that book. But the same rules don't apply for this book. This book is to be taken literally. We cannot add anything different to this. We cannot add wisdom. We cannot add love. We cannot do that. We have to read this book literally. So this book, oh, we add everything and the book blows up like this. This one we take literally and it literally stays small. But something needs to happen. Something needs to be different. What if we added that same wisdom and that same love and that same courage to how this book was written? What would happen? What would happen? So that's kind of what I want to talk about. And if you walk out with anything today, walk out with David brought a cookbook to church on Easter Sunday on there. What if we did read that? It would just be this huge book. And what I've learned in my 20 years of Bible study, I want you to know it wasn't until I came to the center that I even opened up a Bible. I didn't even own one. It was when Kennedy Schultz was offering a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible class. I was going kicking and screaming, but let me go ahead and start. That was 20 years ago, and then since then, people have been coming into my life. Rocco Errico teaching me the Aramaic interpretation of the Bible. Going to Bishop Spong classes and listening how he interprets the Bible, and it's called Progressive Christianity. So I pulled together that there is great wisdom in here if you don't take it literally, if you do exactly like what your grandmother did to that other book over here. So one of the stories which we have taken literally for 1,984 years is this resurrection story. But if you read the story literally, it doesn't make any sense. As kids, we asked, does the dead man really come out walking? I saw somebody on the internet today that it's like, let's really scare our children. Let's give them this Catholic book on resurrection story and everything like that. So it doesn't make sense. John Shelby Spong, he's a Bible scholar that I've just been following lately. He even wrote a book called Rescuing the Bible from Fundamentalism. If you get bigger than that and take it in like I was saying, like our grandmother should be saying that we're taking that, something happens. And Bishop Spong says, to literalize the Easter has become the defining heresy of traditional Protestant and Catholic Christianity. Heresy. He questions, is resurrection real? Give me a yes or a no. He says yes, but to the extent that something great and significant happened after the crucifixion, not necessarily that a dead man walked out of the tomb. The resulting changes of what happened after the crucifixion are easy to document, while that which caused the changes is not easy to document. There were stirring shifts in consciousness back then, along with the dramatic changes in character of the disciples, changes in theology and worship, for within a single generation did things change, like the Christian Sunday began to rival the Sabbath Saturday of the Jewish tradition. This all happened shortly after the crucifixion. Something in mind was really happening. But was it because they saw a dead man walking out of a tomb that this change of consciousness occurred? If you read the good book, it's very confusing. This good book. This all happened about 30 AD. But it wasn't written about this dead man walking out of the tomb until about 90 AD. So if a dead man walked out of a tomb, don't you think they'd be talking about that a little bit more than 60 years later on there? Paul doesn't say it. He says it in about 50 AD, but he doesn't talk about a dead man walking. He writes in 50 AD, letter to Corinthians and things like that, but he's not talking about a dead man walking. Mark has no story of the physical appearance of a risen man. Matthew appears ambivalent. He's got two stories. One appears to be physical with the two women at the tomb. The second is more of a vision in Galilee. Only when we get to Luke and John, written in the 9th and 10th decade, about 90 AD, so he was crucified anywhere around 30 AD is kind of what the scholars are saying. So around 90 AD, Luke and John are writing, do we get the stories about the physicality of the dead man walking? So it was in the 2nd century after that, between 100 and 200 AD, that creeds take shape and begin to form our common understanding of Easter. It was a dead man walking. That's why we call this New Thought ancient wisdom. The New Thought literally takes us back to even before 90 AD. If we take the teachings of that seriously and forget what's been taught for the last about 1,700 years, we can understand really what's being said. So there's discrepancies in the Bible everywhere. You can do it with the Christmas story. It does the same thing. It does a mishmash of all the stories of how we celebrate Easter now. So the Gospels make such a big thing about the tomb and the garden. But you know what? Paul in Corinthians in 50 never even heard of a tomb. He didn't even speak of the tomb. The book of Acts has him buried with others crucified that day. The Gospels tell us about the two women showing up at the tomb. Paul has no mention of this in his letters in 50. Mark has three women showing up. Matthew has two women showing up. Luke has five or six women showing up. John has one woman showing up. So no gospel writer agrees on this point. But it's women in all of their stories that show up and not men. And when you metaphysically understand that, there's a feminine aspect of us and a masculine aspect of each one of us. So what's the feminine aspect of us showing up? What's the masculine aspect of us that's not showing up at that time? The other thing they don't agree upon is who actually saw Jesus. Did you see him? Mark says no. Matthew says yes. Luke says no. John says yes. Who was the first to witness the resurrection? Paul says Cephas. Mark has no witness. Matthew says it was the women in the garden. Luke says it was Cleopas with his traveling companion. John says it was Mary Magdalene. Some said the resurrection occurred in Galilee. Others said it occurred in Jerusalem. So there's discrepancy in the number of days of the ascension as well. Some said it was immediate. Some said it was 50 days later. So it just goes back and forth. There's discrepancy in the 3 days. Some happen, one book says after 3 days, another says in 3 days. And please understand, literally 3 days is not 3 days. 3 days back then was just a short time. It's just a short time. The same as 40 days was a long time. So they were just bringing up 3 days. So this conflict in all the Gospels is the very moment that defines Christianity on this day, about the resurrection. And there's so many questions about it. If that book is so conflicting on that at this level all the way down here on the littler interpretation, then we're basing it all on that. This is why I have seen so many of you who have said that you've sat through church when you were a kid, scratching your head because what was being said in church just did not make sense. And you were scratching your head. But I ask you, what part of you was scratching your head? Something within you was saying, this just doesn't sound right. Paul Gagné, he said he sat in Catholic school and he was petrified to ask the nuns what was going on with that it didn't make sense. He said they had rulers and we were going with the literal interpretation of the Bible. They were stuck in this literal translation, whether it gave you a chipped tooth and indigestion or not. But what was the experience that the disciples had that compelled them to go beyond the limits of their own humanity? Something happened that compelled them to reach deeper than they've ever reached before. This is what the Easter means for us today, to raise our consciousness above our understanding of our humanity, something greater than our humanity. Whatever Easter was to the disciples, it asked them to go beyond their fear. That's what Paul talked about last week. It called them to go beyond their tribal identity. It called them beyond their limits of religion. They were willing to step out from this Judaism. It called them beyond the limits of their own mortality, showing them their own immortality. So what happens next? The gospel writers start a liturgy about it. This is in 90 AD. So you see, the Torah, where all these people came from, is liturgical. It has a cycle. It has a year. It goes through the liturgy about that. 1 year, and it's very convenient. So here are the Jews that are leaving their traditional religion and stating, we need a liturgical cycle too. We don't want these people stepping out too far away from what they knew before. So we're going to do that. So another book that I picked up, and it was really interesting how I met John Shelby Spong, was he was speaking at a church up here on Peachtree, and I made all of the practitioner students go and see Spong when he was speaking. And I was looking at the book table because he's got hundreds of books. And so the crowd was there, and I was looking over somebody's shoulder going, gosh, I don't know which book to get. And he grabs one book, and he turns around, and he says, this is my favorite, and it was Spong himself. And what that book was reading the Bible through Jewish eyes. Reading the Bible through Jewish eyes. Now, this was spectacular because it says how the whole Bible came about as a liturgy, how you have a whole year cycle that's going on in that. The followers of Jesus are making sure the invitation to follow them isn't such a big step from Judaism. So in this one case, guess what's happening this week? Jewish Passover is happening this very same week. So in that, it's breaking the bread. They had to leave so quickly that they couldn't even have risen bread or anything like that. So Luke states, and Cleopas and the other man on the road to Emmaus, that Jesus was made known to them by the breaking of the bread. So here we have a resurrection story going back and say, we too are going to break bread. We want to say the same story about the same time that the Jewish people are saying it. The story of Passover is overcoming death, because what they were doing, they were escaping from the bondage, not being swallowed up in the Red Sea in the Exodus, and having a new life. And the very same time of year, the followers of Jesus say, let's have a story about overcoming death and having a new life. None of this means the transforming moment of Easter is not real, that something didn't happen. It does mean that it was an ecstatic moment breaking in upon their consciousness from another realm. Something greater was happening, something more to them than just their humanity. The followers of Jesus had no God language through which to talk about this new consciousness. So they reverted to the best thing they did have, which was liturgy. So they wrote the liturgy. Any attempt to literate this, literalize this liturgical language of worship, is to miss completely the meaning of the resurrection experience. It gives us indigestion. This is an interpretive tale employed in the process of human explanation in which a life-changing inner experience was enabled to be communicated in the language of history by use of external symbols. That is what liturgy is. That's what liturgy is. But no, we don't want liturgy. We want literal interpretation. So don't take this book literally. Take it liturgically. And when we do that, Easter Sunday wakes up to a whole new meaning. So it was in 50 AD that Paul wrote in Corinthians, therefore, if any man to be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things become new. We even talk about that in the first month of religious science churches when you're coming to religious science in January. We talk about what it does. What does this law do? It makes all things new. That's exactly what Jesus is saying. All things become new. If this could only be true for us, we don't think it's true for us. Could we become new? Between walking through these doors this morning and walking out of these doors 20 minutes from now, could we become new? Could we become new? That is true. We could become new. We could start over again. We could wipe our slate clean. We could get rid of everything that we have on the hard drive. We all want a second chance. We all want a new opportunity. We all want a new lease on life. We ask, if only I could do it all over again. Knowing what I know now, I would do something completely different. And yes, every single day, not just Easter, can we start all over again. But we mostly get up the next morning with our same thinking from yesterday, so we get the same experience, we get the same result. And we need to understand that yesterday ended last night. That is pure Raymond Charles Barker. Yesterday ended last night. We put our head on the pillow and go to sleep. We're thinking of things left undone. We're thinking of the bad things that I said during the day. We're thinking of the good things that I didn't say during the day. But then the next day does start anew. And so we need to start off with a new understanding and a new life rather than bringing all of yesterday in with us. We need to let that fall away. Start with something new. This is what Easter means. You and I are becoming something new. We have a choice to bring the restrictions of yesterday into focus, or we can start with a new idea about ourselves. All things become new, says Paul. This is great. Who here is content with the way things are? Some of us can be. Some of us can raise our hand. Look at the Bryces. They're content. Moores are content. Who is content with who you are? More hands. I like that. Who among us does not want to be more loving, though? Who among us doesn't want to be more passionate or more tender-hearted or more creative or more imaginative or more rich or more useful? Who among us would love to act upon our convictions as opposed to acting on our fears? Watch yourself to see how much you would rather act on your fears rather than act on your convictions. Do you want to change? Yeah, I want to change, but I don't want to change. Don't you want to change your life so that you are not a continuing parody of your life? Easter is that opportunity. This center offers the opportunity for change every time you walk through those doors. Religious science will not leave you where it found you. An English writer said, "There is little good in filling churches with people who go out exactly the same as they came in." So Paul is saying, if you understand this universal consciousness about yourself, if you understand it's not just about you muddling through the day, you will see things differently. And they are different when you start seeing them different. Understand what happens that first Easter morning. The world has not changed that first Easter morning. The sun does not stop in the sky. The rivers don't start running backwards. The wicked folks still are being wicked. The weary folks are still being weary. So as far as the world is concerned, the resurrection is a big anticlimax. Violence still is in the land. People still lie, cheat, and die. Peace didn't break out. There was no kissing in the streets on that day. So what changed? What changed? And that's the wrong question. Who changed? Who changed? The heart of the New Testament is not that the world changed, but that the ordinary men and women, the followers of Jesus who huddled at the foot of the cross, who fled at his death, those ordinary, bewildered, befuddled human beings, these are our ancestors. They were changed from the ordinary to the extraordinary. They were changed, not the world. They were no longer terrified of their own shadow. They were not frightened or fearful of death. They were no longer in awe of the people who had power and terror over them. They had astonished everyone who had known them before this event. Could it be that these were the same people who never understood the parables? Could it be that these were the same people that always showed up late? Could it be these who were never at the right place at the right time? Could it be the same people who denied him, who shivered at the cross, who ran into darkness? They were the ones who didn't believe, quote unquote, the good news when they first heard it. Could these be the same people who were now turning the world upside down? They were changed. The woman at the tomb, remember the liturgical woman at the tomb, not the literal woman at the tomb, were the bearers of the good news. The men, weak, feckless, misunderstanding, and never getting it right, slower than the women show up with this, finally understand. And when you take metaphysical interpretation of the Bible, like I said, you have a feminine aspect of you, a masculine aspect of you. The feminine aspect of us is more of the divinity. The masculine aspect of us is more of the humanity. The two of those things together. So why does the book have women at the tomb? And that's when you understand that metaphysically, what's going on. These men, these second-rated citizens, they become the evangelists, the courageous martyrs, the men who turned the world upside down. These men were surprised by this new power and strength they had acquired as a result of what they observed, their new understanding of themselves. These people who could not organize a one-car funeral are turning the world upside down. These people became the empowering agents of a whole new creation. And here we are, though, in 2014, and the state of the world is pretty much in the same state that it was 1,984 years ago. There's war, there's rumors of war, there are conflicts, there's troubles, there's treachery. Even the master teacher says this, though, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. He doesn't mean he's caused the problems of the world to cease. What he does say is this, what each one of us needs to say. I am not, nor will I ever again, be intimidated or inhibited or defined by the tribulations of the world. I will not be defined by my problems. I will not be defined by my neuroses. I refuse to be victimized or be described as a victim or to be classed among victims. My vision will not be limited by the headlines. I will both live and die by a standard that defies standards of the world. Where the world tells me to hate, I will love, cost what it may. Where the world tells me to stand pat, I will move on to wherever I am to go. Where the world tells me to be prudent, fearful, and cautious, I will be brave, foolish, and courageous, no matter what. Where the world tells me my destiny is shaped by my past, I will claim my universal understanding of good, my universal understanding of God. And what is that universal understanding? I get to start over. Stop giving your power away to the world and claim your universal power. Claim your oneness with this universal understanding. On this day, on Easter Sunday and every day, I get to start over. You get to start over. I put off the old ideas of the world defining me, and I start to define my world. So three Easter lessons for you to walk away with today. Most importantly is, on the interpretation of the Bible, is that please, 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 I love this. Ever since I've started, I had questions about it, but as I've grown in the 20 years in reading it, when you don't read it literally and tight and get a chipped tooth and indigestion, when you read it full of wisdom and love and courage and read it that way, it has this meaning. I want you to walk away with that about this book. I don't want you going running out of the door. Easter is not just about Jesus. It's actually about each one of us. It's about us. It's about our chance to claim our new life and our new world. Easter is not about the past, 1,984 years ago. It's about the present. It's about the present. It's not about your past, the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Does somebody have 70 years past? There's one. Thanks, Joyce. Joyce is here with the 70 years. Another one back here. It's not about that. It's about this present moment. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things become new. A new life is promised this second. Without worrying about yesterday, about speculating about tomorrow, we can start over. Yes, we can have a clean slate. Yes, it's entirely up to us. Fortunately, resurrection is not only in your hands, but it's in your life. This is the power you have. Go back to the books, look at them, see what's going on with that. We ask, did a dead man really walk out of a tomb? But if you really read it up here, in the fullness of all of that, at a spiritual level, at a realization that it was more about the resurrected understanding that the disciples had, that we should have about this power within us. We're not so confused anymore with all of those discrepancies that are going on. It was trying to announce the good life, not just on this plane of existence in the world, for that is full of tribulation, but of the world up here, this greater understanding that we have. It's in this greater knowing. So, again, same thing. If you read either one of these books literally, it's going to be a small life that you're living. But if you read either one of these books full of love, full of knowledge, full of wisdom, full of compassion, full of courage, something great will happen. This is wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. So But let's take this into our understanding. Let us understand that we do have a good book with us, but what it's been saying to us for thousands and thousands of years is to rise in consciousness. Each level, each story is about a new life, a new beginning. Rise in consciousness. So we recognize that. It truly is an aspect of us. At the universal level, all things are new, this very minute. A new body for us, a new career, new love, new abundance. All of it is ours when we understand the newness and how life is trying to push through each one of us. It is on this day that I allow that newness to come in. What I let go of are the old ideas about me. For all of those old ideas, all those shoulda, woulda, couldas, I let go. For when I bring those up, they redefine my life, and I start living the same day that I had yesterday. But it is on this day that I have a new day. It is on this day that I have a new understanding of myself. It is on this day that I awaken to a greater aspect of my humanity. I understand that I am not just this literal interpretation of what a human being is. I am a greater understanding. I am a spiritual understanding of what it means to be human. And in that spiritual understanding of this humanness is my divinity. I recognize it. That's the truth of each one of us. And I release this word to law, knowing that as I have spoken my word, as each one of us has heard this and asked these questions and we're kind of confused about what's going on, something great was happening. We've been speaking a truth that's been spoken for thousands of years, and here we are saying it 1,984 years later. We're speaking this truth about a greater understanding of ourselves. The newness of life is available to each one of us. We accept it, we're empowered by it, and we do walk out of these doors with a new mind, stretched to a new understanding of ourselves, greater than when we walked in. This is the truth for each one of us, and so it is.